Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Michael Kist. Benjamin Solak. It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 58, woo! Brought to you by the fine folks at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter, Michael Kist NFL. As always, joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 8-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, hold up. Final score. Eagles win to stay alive. 32-30. What a roller coaster of a game. But Ben, wow, man, this team, man, this Eagles team, they just keep staying alive. Let's talk about them, Ben. How you doing, brother?
Is there any... How do you understand Nick Foles? Like, how do you... He's amazing. He is impossibly good the worse the odds are against him. He just is better and better the less likely it is that he will be successful. He is amazing. And then he stands up there and he cries at the podium because of how much he loves playing in Philadelphia. He is the most interesting person I know. He is amazing to me. Like, how are you so good in the fourth quarter? My trust in God. Like, he's beautiful. Like, Lane Johnson. Like, Nick Foles was furious about the no face mask call. I was listening to see if he cursed and he didn't curse. Like, Foles just, we sit here and we analyze him, and I do not trust him as my franchise quarterback, and nothing about the Houston game has changed my mind, but boy, you gotta love him. Yeah. Are you kidding me, man?
He's incredible. And, you know, we talk about this a lot. We talked about this a lot with Carson Wentz, you know, his competitive toughness, Nick Foles' competitive toughness for the duration of the game through the third quarter leading up to the interception, the costly interception there, or could have been costly interception that Nick Foles had when he was targeting Ertz and Bernardrick McKinney picked it off. After that,
good play by McKinney,
he's able to put it behind him and just, he just caught fire, man. Like, he was on fire after that. Right after that, he threw the 83-yard touchdown to Nelson Agholor on the next drive. Like, he just is able to put it behind him. He comes to the line. He sees that they're in a coverage that he's seen before. He knows he's going to get one-on-one with Nelson Agholor and Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger. We called him volatile in coverage leading up in the preview show. And Nelson Agholor burned him. And apparently, Nick Foles had called that audible to send Nelly deep like that because he liked the matchup. And it leads to the biggest play, the longest play of the season.
Pre-snap recognition.
Yeah.
Is exactly what we talked about last week. I didn't even know that audible story that Foles audibled into it. I didn't catch that. And we should actually start. I'm very sick right now, which is probably why I sound disgusting, by the way. But I didn't even know that he audibled into that. I had no idea.
Yeah.
But this is what we talked about in last week's show. What was the one thing he brought to the Rams game that you really weren't getting with Carson? It was the ability to recognize pre-snap when he had one-on-one matchups and then throw into those matchups and be willing to trust his receivers in those situations to attack and to not always feel like, you know, you have to like read a full progression. You have to three-man route concepts and find the space in the zone. No, just I've got one-on-one with Agholor. I'm going to hang it out there. I'm going to let him go make a play. And the way this team rallies around him is unbelievable. I mean, when he came back out onto the field after the Jadeveon Clowney hit, I mean, I felt like my TV was shaking with the sound from Lincoln Financial. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like he comes back. The backup quarterback comes back out there to lead a game-winning field goal drive after getting absolutely speared on what I thought was a very legal play, but whatever.
Me too.
Absolutely speared. And he comes back out, takes him down the field, hits Alshon on an incredible 3rd-and-10, 3rd-and-15, maybe, conversion.
Yeah.
In that moment anyway, while he was getting hit. Oh, my goodness. Zach Ertz breaks the single-season receiving record for tight ends with a whole game to spare.
Yeah.
Fumbles on the freaking record-breaking reception, because why not? Of course. Unbelievable. Darren Sproles, who all year has not been able to get on the field, has an unbelievable 12 touches, 108 all-purpose yards, and a touchdown. The exact Darren Sproles game we've needed, the good game from a running back we've always needed to have. The defense has a good game. They gave up 30 points. Obviously, they gave like 14 in the fourth, as they always freaking do. But they came out in the third very strong. I thought Rasul and Avante fought against DeAndre Hopkins. Hopkins had like a 9-catch, 104-yard, no touchdown reception day. That's a W in my book against that receiver with these corners. The pass rush is a half second late all day. Finally gets there for a huge strip sack when the game is still like in contention in the third quarter. Oh my goodness. What an exhilarating game. What a fun game to watch.
Ben.
I'm exhausted.
Nick Foles, 35 for 49, 471 yards, 4 touchdowns, and an interception. Like I said, like going into the half, the stat line looked good, but you're like, okay, he had the strip sack and he had misfires. There were some high throws and whatnot. He just gets it together mentally. When it matters, somehow he makes it happen. It's astonishing to me. And we often talk like with rational heads about like, okay, this is what Wentz does well. This is what Foles does well. Foles just in the second half, like I was timid on saying that he was having a really good game. I thought he was playing solid. And then he catches fire, dude. It's incredible.
And we got to talk. So Foles, it's very important to understand. You said 471 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. Fantastic. We're talking about 49 passing attempts, almost 50, right? And so remember back in 2016, 2017, we would get so worried about the amount of attempts Carson was taking, right? Carson has never attempted. Actually, it's not true. In 2016 and 2017, he never attempted 49 passes. Yeah. He had 50 passes in the Tennessee game this year, obviously went to overtime. So he's got a higher number than that. This was more in a single game than Carson ever attempted in two seasons. Obviously breaks the single game passing record Nick Foles does, but in the most Folesian way possible, he does it with a yards per attempt less than 10 of 9.6.
And that's how it should have been. And that's what we said. Supplant the run game with the quick passing game. Like, they only ran 22 times.
50 passes if you count the Sudfeld throw, which honestly, like, Doug's aggressiveness is my favorite thing in the world. No more so than when his third string quarterback goes out on a potentially game-winning drive in a must-win game, and Doug throws it. He throws it with Nate Sudfeld. I love it. But 50 passes to 22 runs, not even a 2-to-1 ratio, a greater than 2-to-1 ratio passing the football. And Sproles, 9 carries, 32 yards, but with a log of 16, only averaged 3.6. Adams with 11 carries for 21 yards, averaged less than 2 yards a carry. This was not an effective running game. Average of 2.6 yards per carry total across the backs and across Nick Foles on his one scramble. So, there you go. This was not going to be a game where you're going to be able to run the ball effectively. You saw what Jadeveon Clowney was doing, especially once Peters went out quick. Mother Mary in heaven. We knew he was going to have a good game. We knew he was a problem. Sweet Lord. I was like, all right. They need to give Vitae a chip on both sides. Give him help on either shoulder. I don't care. Clowney's going to murder him. Vitae stepped it up a bit in that regard. Shout out goes to Lane Johnson, who was fantastic on the right-hand side. But yes, Mike, I think as far as what we expected from the game plan, the short passes to supplement the run game, yes, there. The Jadeveon Clowney problems and the solution there, absolutely. What I think we, at least for me, I came in saying, all right, so this is your man coverage game. Alshon Jeffrey's the answer. Alshon's your best man beater. Zach Ertz is the zone beater. Alshon had 3 catches for 82 yards even after corners started going down.
Yeah.
I need to apologize for Zach Ertz. Apparently, he can beat some man coverage too.
I think everyone needs to apologize to Zach Ertz for all the slander that is being said about him in recent history. He balled out this game. And you know what helps? It helps when you use other people the way they should be used, like Nelson Agholor, as a deep threat. But please continue, Ben. Let's go Zach Ertz, man. Congratulations.
I can't, like, I was writing about it. My winners, losers, and I don't know's column usually has about 18, 20 people in it. It had 55 this week because I wrote a blurb on literally every single member of the Eagles 53-man roster because I was so excited. Now, that being said, for, like, BJ Bello or whatever that linebacker is, I don't really write that much. But for the other guys, I did.
Deshaun Hall had a sack.
My line for Deshaun Hall and Trayvon Hester was both, got a sack? Well done, team. Let's go. But anyway, I was so close to calling Trayvon Hester T.Y. McGill intentionally in my post because I keep on mentioning T.Y. McGill and forgetting he's not on the roster. But regardless, the line I said in that post was just like, you're running out of superlatives for Zach Ertz because he simply, like, it's just, I can't think of a player who is so good in such a non-highlighty sort of way.
Right.
Like, Ertz is just a machine. He, like when they say a tight end is the quarterback's best friend, Zach Ertz is the best friend of your best friends. He's your bestest friend. He's your freaking sixth grade, you're my real best friend, they're just my other best friend's best friend. Is the consistency, the ability to uncover, the difficult catch at the goal line. Mike, you knew it was a record-setting day because he broke his first tackle in his friggin' career on his second touchdown.
Yeah.
That was what I knew. That was what I knew. Eagles are going to the playoffs. If Zach Ertz is breaking tackles, unicorns can fly, wizards are real, we're going to the playoffs. Zach Ertz broke a tackle.
So, Ben, obviously this game had huge playoff implications, and not just for the Eagles, too. So let's get into that, and then we'll kind of dial back to some different turning points in the game. First of all, this game keeps the Texans from clinching the AFC South, which puts them in a must-win game against the Jaguars in Week 17. They also need...
You're welcome, Frank Reich.
Exactly. They need the New England loss next week to regain their first-round bye. And by the way, how in the heck did the Giants end up losing to the Colts? I completely missed that comeback. And then you get the Vikings. They beat the Lions, and they would have clinched a playoff spot with an Eagles loss, but the Eagles staved that off for at least a week. So here's what needs to happen for the Eagles. So let's detail these scenarios. Yes. You beat the Redskins. Shouldn't be a problem, and quite frankly, if they lose to them, they don't deserve it to be, you know, they don't deserve to be in there anyway. Second, the Vikings lose to the Bears in Minnesota next week. That puts Eagles in with the sixth seed. Third scenario, if the Vikings win, the Eagles can still get in if the Seahawks lose to the Chiefs tonight and the Cardinals next week, which is pretty unlikely. So I think it comes down to the Bears and the Vikings. Now, just a wild card scenario before I kick it to you, Ben. If both happen, the Seattle Seahawks lose twice, the Vikings lose, the Eagles win, the Eagles would have the fifth seed. But let's zero in on this, Ben. Let's lay all of this out. So the main thing that we need is the Bears to play their starters next week. I believe that they will. They beat the 49ers today, which helps because they are in contention for the second seed and a bye, which is super important. And the Rams play at 4 p.m. on that Sunday, so they won't know.
Right. Now, we expect those games to get bumped around a fair bit. That's what you should anticipate happening. Obviously, like, that's just... You know, they have the freedom to flex all of those games,
right.
And so you should anticipate seeing that. Now, that being said, you would have liked to have seen the Steelers pulled out against the Saints simply for this reason. I tweeted about this, and I had many people yell at me because they thought I was implying that the Bears would have nothing or would rest all their starters and be okay with losing the Minnesota game if there was no Saints win over the Steelers, which is not what I was saying. You're the Bears right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Saints won and because the Rams won, you're... only path to a seed higher than 3, i.e. a first round bye, is going to be the Rams losing to San Francisco at home, which isn't super likely. I know you just played San Francisco and they played you within a possession, but you don't really anticipate that being the case. So as of right now, 538's playoff calculator, which you can Google that and find, it's a ton of fun to play with. It's really nicely done. Has the Rams at an 85% chance of winning that game over the Niners. So you don't anticipate the Niners winning it. So let's say you're at a point where you've got a couple starters who are dealing with nagging injuries. You know, you've got a couple guys who have been playing for 16 straight weeks. And you know, if you don't get the Rams to lose to the Niners, you're not getting a first round bye. If you have guys on the fence and you're looking at this Minnesota team, win or lose this game for Chicago, you are making the playoffs. You've already won the division. It's a matter of third seed. And there's not even a chance that they're going fourth seed because Chicago won. So the Rams are the Bears are locked in at third seed. There's no way they're going fourth seed. So you can rest a few of your starters knowing that, hey, if you lose, you just get Minnesota next week in the playoffs, which obviously adds a weird dimension to it. Like, I don't know how to process the fact that the Bears losing to Minnesota would mean they would play Minnesota in the playoffs again in Chicago. Like, this time in Chicago. Does that make you more incentivized to win and get the Eagles? Does that make you less incentivized to win? Like, I don't really know how to process that. But the point being, because the Bears' only avenue to the second seed is a Rams loss at home against the Niners, I expect the Bears to be very liberal with their injury report and who they choose to bench. Because I think if you're the Bears, you think you can beat Minnesota with a couple starters down. You really do. And if you don't, you just get Minnesota again in the playoffs this time at home.
Right.
While I don't think the Bears are going to roll out Chase Daniel, freaking Josh Bellamy, whoever their backup wide receiver is, I think it was Bellamy like 3 years ago, right? I don't think they're going to sit all their starters, but if I had a guy with a nagging injury I'm not going to get him, you know, beat up for the next playoff game when I know it's very unlikely. 85% chance Rams are getting the bye. So there you go. So if the Saints had lost to the Steelers, well then, wow, the Rams would, the Bears would have had a much better chance. Two avenues towards getting that first round bye would have been a little bit more willing, I think, to gut it out against Minnesota. So that's the nature behind that. Philadelphia right now, again, if you're looking at the playoff odds calculator, and this is why it's a lot of fun, it gives you the probabilities for all the outcomes. You can toggle whether or not teams lose or win. So right now, Philadelphia's got a 31% chance, Mike, of making the playoffs. It's not super great, but if you have them beating Washington, it goes up to 49. So coin flip. If they beat Washington, it's a coin flip whether or not they make the playoffs. And hey, if you assume Kansas City goes ahead and beats Seattle, it already bumps it up a few points, so it's at above 50%. Yeah. So assuming Kansas City beats Seattle, which Seattle's got a banged up secondary right now, Kansas City's obviously very, very hot. Eagles have a 53% chance of making the playoffs. It all basically comes down to a Seattle loss against Arizona, or Minnesota loss against Chicago.
Right.
Those are the two games that you're watching. As Mike said, the Bears are not playing after the Rams game. They won't know the result. So they still have, they won't be locked into a seed, so they will technically have something to play for, which is good. Those games will likely get flexed around a little bit, but it would be very much so in the league's interest to make sure Chicago has something to play for and to make sure that Minnesota has something to play for, which is to say the Eagles game can't be before the Minnesota game, because if the Eagles lose, Minnesota's locked into their seed. There's no way they're not making the playoffs. So you're going to see the Eagles game, the Bears game, and the Los Angeles Rams game all happen at the same time, in my opinion.
So those are the playoff implications for the Eagles moving forward. A lot of different moving parts. Of course, we'll have it all covered here at Bleeding Green Nation. We'll be detailing it throughout the week, making sure that you're informed on everything that's going on. Let's dial back to this game for a second, because this is a game where the Eagles, once again, were up towards the end of the game, and you start to see the cracks in the wall start to develop, and you get the Josh Adams feature back fumble.
Oh.
You also get the missed extra point by Jake Elliott, which leads to the Texans getting up a score after that fumble. And after Vincent Smith,
listen,
the limestone wide receiver,
listen,
that I pounded the table for in the offseason. Go ahead.
Stop yourself immediately. Jake Elliott missed the extra point on purpose.
Mm.
So as to kick his game-winning field goal, Michael. Because when you're a hustler,
long con.
When you're a hustler,
yeah,
you can't stop hustling, all right? I will never, ever listen to anything bad about Jake Elliott ever again, ever. I never have said anything bad. It was funny because I tweeted out, I've never doubted Jake Elliott. And people are like, haha, yeah, that's funny. But I literally haven't. I've been his staunchest supporter. Let me ask you this. How many kickers in the league right now do you think have a perfect extra point percentage? Off the top of your head, go.
22.
Seven. Who have attempted at least five extra points. There are seven kickers in the league who have never missed one. So unless you're going to go get one of those seven, because somehow they're going to leave their current team, you can suck it up with Elliott missing an extra point now and then, because he is the coolest, clutchest kicker who has never in his young career missed a potential game winning, game tying, or go ahead kick in the fourth quarter. Thank you very much, Jacob.
I just love that he had to create his game winning field goal because of that scenario. You never know if the Texans might have gone for two or whatever the situation is.
No.
Jake Elliott with a long con. I get it. It's baller. Yeah. It's alpha.
Listen, I will hear nothing besides the fact that Jake Elliott absolutely intentionally brought this into existence. And I will hear no other claims.
I'm just upset that that's the most I've been off on one of these guessing games in a long time. I don't know why I said 22. That's very high.
Yeah, 22 was healthy. I mean, with people who've only attempted like one or two, maybe, because like Camus was one for one last year. So like, you know. But yeah, you're wrong. You're dumb.
Hey, Chris Long. Showing up for this game, getting a strip sack. How about him? Fletcher Cox coming up with it. And what do you get? You get a short field and you get points out of it. That's what this team needed. That's what this team needed coming into this game. And this defense, this
defense alone. Have
you looked at the rushing totals for the Texans? My God.
Oh, 13 yards on 11 running back carries.
Right.
And I know that there was some complaints about Watson, the mobile quarterback. And there's this perception that mobile quarterbacks always kill the Eagles defense. And I'm here to tell you that's completely right, and it's completely wrong, and I'll tell you why. The reason it feels like mobile quarterbacks always kill the Eagles defense, and every fan of every defense experiences this, is that you only notice your team is getting run on by the quarterback when it's playing a mobile quarterback, right? Which is to say, like, of course mobile quarterbacks kill your defense, because the other weeks, there's no mobile quarterback playing, right? So you're like, oh man, these mobile quarterbacks rushes for so much on us. Yeah. as compared to the non-mobile quarterbacks who are not trying to run the football, right? If like Watson, when he had 49 rush yards, I'm sure that was one of his better ones, and he rushed the ball 8 times for an average of 6 yards. Listen, an 8 carry, 49 yard, 6 rush player as a running back wouldn't be that big of a problem.
Yeah.
It really wouldn't. Obviously, 2 touchdowns sucks.
Right.
I'm not going to dispute that. That's what a quarterback with legs gives you in the red zone. And if any fans should know that, it's Philadelphia fans, because Carson Wentz presents that problem in the near red zone all the freaking time and in short yardage situations. I'm looking here. Watson had 4 for 26 last week, 5 for 35, 7 for 30, 9 for 70, 3 for 7, 6 for 38, 1 for 14, 7 for 13, 2 for 2, 10 for 40, 6 for 41. It was one of his better games, and probably one of his most effective from a yards per carry perspective, but it wasn't an aberration compared to how he runs pretty much against every other defense.
Right.
So let's understand that. And now let's talk about the holistic nature of the defense. Philadelphia's front four was not generating a ton of number pressure. They had like 3 pressures and 1 sack, like a bit of the ways into the third quarter. But Houston was keeping 6, if not 7 players to block in regularly. And what you saw that causing a problem for was when Watson would stand back there and you have 7 guys dropping in coverage against 3 or 4 routes. And that allows Philadelphia to pattern match, to drop into zones, and to really blanket cover. Now, they definitely were not getting as up into Watson's face as you would have liked to have seen when he broke the pocket. They'd have a linebacker chasing him down, but Watson was able to break a lot of linebacker angles. Again, 8 for 49. Not a like ridiculous day, but he was able to break a few angles. When Philadelphia came out with a spy, they very frequently hit man coverage behind it because they didn't want a spot drop zone and they couldn't pattern match with that few people. Like, you know, if you've got a spy, you're pattern matching with 6 against 5. That's a little tricky. And so as a result, they're coming out on man. And that's when you saw Watson go very first read heavy and slice him and dice him because Philadelphia had struggled taking away the first read. The only way that defense worked was when Avonte Maddox would get a pass breakup on 1st and 10. Rasul Douglas made a good tackle, make it 2nd and 8. You know, you get a stop on a running play and make it 2nd and 12, which happened a lot. So this is the nature of having a beat up secondary. The rock and the hard place that we talk about. You either play the pattern match zones, rush with 4. Sometimes you get to Watson and sometimes you don't. He breaks and he's able to pick up a chunk yardage. Or you try to spy him, but you're playing man coverage behind it and Watson can throw the ball all over you. And you saw there were drives where the Texans seemed to be moving the ball at will and then they wouldn't be able to throw the ball in the very next possession. And that, from what I could see, was simply because the Eagles were then dropping 7 back into zones, playing cover 6, quarter half, cover 3 cloud, and pattern match cover 3, stuff they've done all year, with a lot of success. It's so important to remember that pressure is not instantaneous. You expect it to get there. We were talking about 2.5 seconds, and Watson's time to throw, it might not look super high because of how often he can scramble and extend plays, but he was hitting his first read in the pocket right off his back foot very, very frequently, and that's going to negate pressure. It's what we've talked about all year.
I want to dial back into something on the offensive side of the ball. Let's talk about Josh Adams, 11 carries for 21 yards, a 1.9 average. We kind of touched on it, how balance did not win this game. That was not our recommendation. The Eagles listened. And look, here's what I want to do. I want to take all of these 3rd and 1, 3rd and 2, 4th and 1 packages, and I want to take all of these running plays, and I want to set them on fire because they don't work. The only time that it worked is on the touchdown that got called back because Big V had to hold to Jadeveon Clowney, which was great for our brand. But anyway,
yes,
I want to take all of those plays, I want to throw them out, and I want to replace and slide in one play.
Tell me why.
Because it doesn't work. We're not a power running team. We're asking Josh Adams to make decisions on these schemes that we run him in when we need to give him a dedicated lane. It hasn't worked for us at all. What I would much rather do is replace all of those plays with the play that has worked on 4th down 2 weeks in a row now, which is the mesh sit wheel with
mesh
Darren Sproles.
Sit wheel! They tried to run it another 2 times and it didn't work, and Foles can't hit that throw well, which is a sneaky, tricky throw, and I'm going to give that to Nick. I don't give a lot of things to Nick. I'm going to give that to Nick.
Yeah.
The wheel throw is tough because you're at such a weird angle with your body. You can't align your hips in a way the way you would any like crossing route, and also your perception's kind of off. The running back is gaining depth away from you toward the sideline, but he's also about to come upfield, so it's really tricky to place that ball well, especially when a linebacker's closing. You don't want to float that thing out there and let the thing get picked off. But the 2 throws on the 4th and 2 conversion and then the touchdown.
Yeah.
Mwah!
And this is why this play works, because you're getting that wheel, and what's happening is you have two defenders in that area, and typically you've got Alshon Jeffrey on that side, and he's down in a condensed split. So Alshon Jeffrey is going to create traffic with the defender that's covering him. The other defender, who is going out to cover Sproles, who's darting out to the side, has to make a decision. He needs to go under the traffic to get to the flat where it can be thrown, which it was on that fourth down, or in the other case, he has to go over the traffic to get to the wheel, which is more vertical because it goes flat to a wheel. So you saw it on that fourth down and short. They threw the flat because it was there before it turned into the wheel. Then later on, you get the wheel route more vertical down the sideline. Beautiful throw by Foles. I thought Foles overall did have some misfires, but there were some plays where he put that puppy in a beautiful spot, showed some nice touch, especially on the wheel, especially on the throw to Alshon. Some of the throws to Ertz were in spots. The throw at the end to Jeffrey. Jeffrey's got those pickle jar hands, comes down with it on a big one. Yeah, there were some great throws mixed in with some misfires, but overall, great game. But yeah, that fourth down, mesh sit wheel, run that every time. Forget about trying to run Josh Adams down the middle.
I think I'm going to go back through the game, and just to trigger everybody for fun, I'm going to cut up the, like, easily five throws that Nick Foles just missed.
Oh, yeah.
Be like, these were throws that happened in the single game, highest passing yards. Like, he missed, it's like he missed, like, a couple. He missed, like, five, like, easy ones. And though there were a few, the Zach Ertz catch on third and, like, goal from the 15 or whatever it was after the offensive holding from Vitae, threw two guys in contact going down to the field to get it.
Yeah.
And then it brings up the fourth and goal that he converts. Unbelievable. The Alshon Jeffrey third and 10. Incredible. Aguilar also had one. I don't remember where it was, but it was across the intermediate middle of the field where he skied to grab one all fingertips. Incredible strength. Fantastic. Listen, Aggie, let's bring up Aggie because you deserve an opportunity to talk about Aguilar with his 83-yard catch and run touchdown, because you were staunchly in the Aguilar deep threat camp while I was a little bit more skeptical. So you deserve your time in the sun here.
So let's talk about that, because number one, Foles knows that the matchup with Aguilar is advantageous to Aguilar, just one-on-one going down the field. Aguilar, let's talk about him and his 4.43 speed that hit a higher average miles per hour on deep routes than Torrey Smith last year. A lot of people talk about this team not having a deep threat. I argued that they have one with Nelson Aguilar.
They just got to use him like that.
Correctly. And before Tate got here, Nelson Aguilar was asked to be the Tate role, that role that they wanted to fill, be the yak guy. He is our intermediate to deep threat. Let him do that. That's what fits his skill set the best. And yeah, it might not lead to the most consistent production, but I'd rather have him go instead of six catches for 29 yards, 30 yards. Give me a chance to hit one big, deep pass a game. And that's what Aguilar brings to this team. Remember, 4.43 speed. This guy can stretch you vertically from the slot. And I think on that one, he was in trips. He was in number two. So he was in between the two other guys. He is a threat to the seam and to anyone trying to single him up down the field. That's what he needs to be. That's how he will be successful moving forward.
Right, and we talk about how deep speed is only one portion of being a deep threat, and that's why Shelton Gibson remains laboring between the active 46 and the 53, because yeah, the boy can fly, but he can't do much else. Aguilar, one, physicality through the route, down the field to maintain leverage on Tyrann Mathieu, who, while he's not a fast cover corner, is no slouch in when he's in your cylinder. He is a physical dude. He's got size on Aguilar. He's bigger than Aguilar is. And Aguilar maintained leverage on him. And then two, tracking ability.
Yeah.
Because that was a deep post. It was either a dino concept where it was a deep post over a short post, or it was just a classic pin, a Mills concept where it was a deep dig, which is flat across the field, not a post. It was a dig, and then Aguilar's running the post on top.
Yeah.
So really, what you expect to see is that ball to be a little bit more towards the sideline, so Aguilar doesn't have to bend back upfield. But Aguilar, so number one was leverage, number two is tracking ability. His ability to locate that ball and realize, I've got to get upfield on my defender. No longer am I getting leverage into the sideline. Leverage is if the ball is being thrown across the field. I got to leverage upfield and go get this football. Fantastic tracking. If he could do his little falling into the end zone celebration a tick quicker next time, I'd really appreciate it. I was losing my mind. I was flashbacks to DeSean Jackson.
Yeah.
Mother Mary just getting the freaking end zone. But absolutely. And listen, speaking of Golden Tate, three targets, two catches, 13 yards. They've officially stopped trying to feed Tate. Period.
It's a 12-personnel team. They've realized what they are. They're a 12-personnel team, which they should have been this entire time.
Wendell Smallwood had four targets.
Yeah.
Darren Sproles had six targets.
Can we talk about how Darren Sproles brings an element to this offense that allows them to do things that they weren't able to do before he returned to the lineup? How useful is that? How great is that to have?
Sproles' ability to get the ball, and you talked about Josh Adams making decisions. Sproles' ability to make decisions with the ball in his hands that regularly maximize vertical yardage. Split zone, Sproles is banging that puppy upfield. I'm getting vertical. Draw plays, I'm getting behind my offensive lineman, and the second I see daylight, I'm going to make sure I have room, and I'm going to go get vertical. Right? That ability to stay ahead of the sticks, and something we talked about in the 4 for 13 conversion on third downs against the Rams. Philadelphia came back this week, 9 out of 16, but their depth of third down was way down. Yeah. Their ability to stay ahead of the sticks when you have a guy like Darren Sproles is you didn't realize what it was until it came back. Like, you know, when they didn't have it, you weren't even thinking about it, but when it was back, you're like, oh, wait, this is what it looks like when you can check down to a dude on first and 10 and get the second and six. This is what it looks like when, even when you hand the ball off on second and 10, which is mind-numbing and exhausting and you hate it, the guy is going to squeeze forward for 3-4 yards and at least put you on a more manageable third down, even though, again, I don't like the decision.
Right.
You want to know decisions I do like, Michael? 4 for 4 on fourth down, baby! And I liked the go for 2 in the first quarter as well. I freaking loved it. Or the second quarter.
Yeah.
4 for 4 on fourth down, that's my 2017 Philadelphia Eagles, baby. I missed that. Thank you for bringing that back.
And I like that you mentioned the two-point conversion. I agree with the call as well. As I mentioned, the ref was probably drunk for that, missed the face mask on Nick Foles. And then
let me tell you,
the next drive, I was so irritated with the refs. The Brandon Graham roughing the passer penalty. I mean, none of those referees. The one on Clowney I thought was bad too. I think it's inconsistently enforced around the league every week for every team. But with those two calls back-to-back, you're like, Mike, can we catch a break?
I said during the game. I've never understood officiating less. You know what I mean? Carried over. I watched the whole Saints and Steelers game with my pops. I'm home for Christmas. My pops a huge Steelers fan.
That pass interference call on the fourth down for the Saints was like one of the worst calls.
Or the Joe Hayden one on fourth and one, which the Saints then turned into 7 points and what ended up being a 3-point game.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about. That was the worst.
No, yeah. And then there was the one on Morgan Burnett, which was on – he clearly avoided contact to play for the football and they called it. And just like, I don't really understand officiating anymore. You know what I mean? And it's funny, like the more, like when I was a casual fan who watched the Eagles, I thought I understood officiating pretty well. And the more games I've watched and the more work I've done, the less I understand officiating and how it works and what they're actually supposed to call.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Michael Thomas had a catch in that game, in the Saints game, right at the goal line, where if that catch happened in play, like at the 40, he wouldn't have had possession yet because he hadn't made a football move.
Right.
But he caught it at the goal line.
Yeah.
And then it was a catch and a touchdown. And I was like, I don't even know how, like, so a catch is different in the end zone? Like, it's amazing.
Right.
I just don't really understand officiating anymore. Like, Brandon Graham, he put his weight on the quarterback. Well, he clearly put his hands out to break his fall. Head-to-head contact, it was his shoulder. And you can very clearly see that. Jadeveon Clowney leading with his head. What is he supposed to lead with? The head is in front of his body.
And he hit him in the numbers. It's not like he hit him in the head.
Right.
If
he turns his head to the side, doesn't that expose his neck? What, he's supposed to like shoulder check him? Like, what? I don't get it. You know, I just don't understand officiating anymore, which makes these things exhausting. But my last thing that I want to talk about, and this is, I think, like the last note that at least I want to have, we can talk about more Eagles stuff. Best game I've seen Deshaun Watson play in a Houston Texan uniform, period.
I mean, Demaryius Thomas goes down, which I feel awful for Demaryius Thomas because that's going to might affect him going into next season. He's already getting up there. Like, that sucks for him. But yes, Watson, great game.
29 for 40, 339 yards, and 2 touchdowns, along with, and I cut you off before you said this because I had to defend Jake Elliott, the incredible throw and catch to Vincent Smith, who was burner out of Limestone College. Yes, you called him. Very impressive, Mike.
Thank you. Yep. I agree.
But the play, that was on 3rd and 10. The 3rd and 15 before that, the one where he pinballed between about 4 different sacks.
What was that?
Are you kidding me? Like, that was that's the best sort of play to happen against your team because you can't even be mad. Like, I know the Eagles don't have, like, a sacking problem. I don't really have an issue wrapping up. Those were good looks. Like, you know, the quarterback, like, elusive, like Watson is, you're going to have to, like, get a couple hits on him. Like, the strip sack, Brandon Graham got there first. Chris Long was just there for cleanup. Most of the sacks were the first guy who got there just moved him off his spot. The second, the third guy were there for cleanup. There were four guys on an angle on him. Nobody's able to get him. And I couldn't do anything but laugh. He uncorks it 30 yards down the field to DeAndre Hopkins. Incredible Carson Wentz-esque play. Oh man, Deshaun Watson and like Nick Foles super clutch, but Nick Foles robbed what could have been a like statement drive and win for Deshaun Watson. Because yeah. If Foles doesn't win that game with drive back and obviously Elliott and like all the other players, but if Foles doesn't drive that back, kick the game winning field goal, we're talking about that Watson drive all the way into the conference championship games when the Texans are playing the freaking Chiefs.
That's a defining drive. That's a defining drive, and it had some. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins just decided to activate his magnet hands on that drive too. Had some crazy catches in tight coverage.
I felt so bad for Rasul. So the first one, Rasul plays good defense, and Hopkins picks it up off the turf in a way that you just can't.
And he was late to it too.
You can't train that, right? Yeah. Exactly. And then the very next play, Rasul Douglas high fives DeAndre Hopkins while he's catching the football. Yeah. And Hopkins has it on four fingertips.
Yeah.
And Sewell nails him in the hands. There are like two other receivers in the league make that catch. And like Sewell finishes the play, looks back, realizes Hopkins still has it, and just like shrugs his shoulders like, well, why am I even here? Like, what is the meaning of life? It's odd. Like, I felt so bad for him. Maddox had a good day. Man,
yeah.
Let me ask you this, because I was pontificating over this. Sidney Jones is healthy next week. Is Sidney starting outside and Maddox starting in the slot, or is Maddox starting outside and Sidney starting in the slot?
Man, Maddox has been so good outside that I would start Sidney in the slot.
I'll put it to you this way.
Yeah,
I think the answer is you can do either,
right?
And you can do it matchup wise. Sidney's going to have a little bit more length and size to him, you know. So if you're against a team like the Redskins who are going to play Jamison Crowder on the outside, then like leave you're Maddox fine. Out there, and if right, and you try to get Doxon lined up over Rasul, that's your ideal situation. But then you go to Chicago in your first playoff game, knock wood. You know, you go up against a team like Chicago, and they're out there playing Anthony Miller, you know, in the slot, and Allen Robinson in the boundary. Maybe you think about switching it up, right? If you have a team that feeds their offense through their slot, then listen, put Maddox there because Maddox is the better freaking cover man right now. Yeah, playing great. Obviously, he got a lot of help when he was on Hopkins. Sewell had Hopkins more so in a traditional cover three. They let Maddox play more underneath Hopkins with a safety on top, which was fantastic coaching and serves the strength of his corners. And I really appreciated Schwartz doing that. And my last note on Schwartz, Mike, the Eagles over the last five games have given up three total third quarter points. So when they come out of the half and it's adjustment versus adjustment,
yeah.
In five games, it was 3 points to Dallas. And honestly, I didn't even check. I'm just going to say it was off a turnover because it probably freaking was. fourth quarter is a problem. We acknowledge that's been a problem all season. Is it a conditioning thing? Is it a time of possession thing? Is it a in-half adjustment thing? Maybe. But all I know is when they come out of the locker room, the Eagles defense over the home stretch here, now keep in mind they won three out of the five of those games, I believe, maybe four. Man. No, four of the five. They won four of the five of those games.
Yeah.
Won four of the five of those games, only giving up 3 points in the third quarter. That's impressive halftime adjustments by Jim Schwartz, who should stay on as Eagles defensive coordinator.
Ben, let's get to three words and let's see what the gentle listeners had to say. Oh my God,
I forgot we even do this. Oh my heavens.
So I got a couple for you right out of the gate. Joseph King at @gamer_Joe87 says, fly, Bears, fly. Which is a big one, as we detailed for the playoff implications. We need the Bears to take care of business next week against the Minnesota Vikings. Would definitely help us. Right now, I'm watching the Kansas City Chiefs and the Seattle Seahawks game. It's early in the game. The Seahawks are up 7-0 as it stands right now in the first quarter. So not looking great there either. But of course, the Chiefs can score like 50 on you out of nowhere. So I'm not too worried about that. Byron at Byron.
Byronic Gyro 1.
Byronic Gyro 1. There you go. Thank you, Ben. Foles, Sproles, goals. Those are your relationship goals.
Listen, and I would like to take this moment to formally move that in respect for Nick Foles and Darren Sproles, heroes of the game, that we call John Stolness John Stoles for the entire week. I just think it's good juju. I simply do. Should also note, for those of you wondering, I wore my lucky Eagles Christmas sweater for the entire game. Actually, that's not true. After the fumble, I took it off because I was a little bit upset, but then I put it back on. And then the Eagles won. So the lucky Christmas sweater is now 2-0.
At Brand Jones 2, I am alive. It's a Rick and Morty gift, so I got to shout that out. Love that show.
Yeah, I respect
Very
it.
Very nice brand.
I'm finding so many fewer big Knicks than I'm used to seeing, which is, you know, it's new. Congrats, Zach Ertz from at Envy No Man, which absolutely, that should be the... That should be the situation. What was the other one that I found that I liked? Oh, Frank Mack at Frank One Camp says fire Doug Peterson, which was something that was actually being said a month ago, which is obviously not being said now.
Lombardi was right.
Oh, dude, I want some. No, BLG is going to respond. May he forever reign. BLG is going to respond next week with Lombardi was right.
Yeah.
Ridgewood at Teddy underscore Ridgewood says Foles Festivus Miracle, which I always appreciate a good Festivus reference. That makes me happy.
I like that.
All the expletives from Adam Schinder at Recordinator Schinder. Absolutely. This was a game full of expletives, man.
Owen Jones at, bitter and S. Needed to pee. So glad this game ended for you and you're able to get to the bathroom and tweet that out, Owen. Good job. Good win, Eagles.
I couldn't watch the lead up to the Jake Elliott kick. I turned around once he actually attempted the kick, but I couldn't watch it like while they were just lining it up. I was awful. Like, we've gotten so many like heart attack imminent, high blood pressure, everybody. There was a high cardiac game for sure. Big Nick Energy from Flicker Fade, which is that's BLG. May he forever reign. That's his new thing as well, Big Nick Energy. I will say though, and I want to pull this up here. I'm going to pull it up in my notifications real quick because somebody hit me up with the hashtag, I have a take. And I really like that. And so I would like to make a formal announcement for all of you who are in like 45 minutes into this podcast. If you ever have a take that you want to be shared on the podcast, it's got to be a good one. But if you hit me up with the hashtag, I have a take, which is obviously my line for when I have a take, I'd gladly read it. I think it'll be a lot of fun. So in the spirit of Daniel at DSPEC12, I have a take, Mike. If Avante Maddox had played versus the Cowboys in week 14, the Eagles would be NFC East champs. Daniel's basically saying, if the Eagles had Maddox able to play on Amari Cooper, Eagles win that game, and Eagles right now would be, if they had won that game, unquestionably, the NFC champions in week 16. Or the NFC East champions. And Mike, I don't hate the take.
I don't hate the take at all.
I don't hate the take. It's bold, because Maddox, I think, has gotten better these past 2 weeks in terms of his man coverage. Mm-hmm. And so extrapolating back, I don't know if he would have played as well as he did in the Rams game or the Texans game in the Cowboys game. But that being said, hampered Sidney Jones, Devontae Bosby, or Avante Maddox circle week 13, week 14, Maddox probably the best coverage man of the three. And if you just take away the Bosby touchdown, the one where Bosby had good coverage and then didn't see it, listen, it changed the complexion of that game. Daniel, thank you for the inaugural hashtag, I have a take. Boy, I think you had a good one.
Eagles win 32-30. Ben, have a take and take us home. Say goodbye to the gentle listeners.
We enjoyed, on Bleeding Green Nation Radio, a record-setting week last week. In week 15 of the season, with relatively thin playoff hopes. And that is super cool. It is so much fun having you guys listen to the podcast, getting a massive influx, a swell of ratings and reviews, which we want to read, but there's so much content to get through because the Eagles are approaching week 17 with live playoff hopes. So potentially we're not probably going to get through those because we don't have any airtime to fill. But we will, I promise, so keep rating and keep reviewing, especially as we move into week 17 and beyond, knock wood. Thank you so much for listening to the shows. All the shows, BGN Radio, the QB SCO show, all of the visitation shows from opposing on-air talents from opposing teams. Man. The listenership here is amazing and we're very grateful. As always, I've been Benjamin Solak on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. He's been Michael Kist on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. What is there more to say? Obviously, we're going to be getting a review show out on this film as soon as possible. Eagles with their biggest win of the season since the last win of the season. And they are going into week 17 with very real playoff hopes. We hope you join us for those preview shows coming up later this week. Thank you so much for listening.
We all we got. We all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, Maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Support for this podcast came from SAS. Data is everything. And now everything is data, which means more to process, more to analyze. And now more than ever, speed to answers matters. So how do you produce those answers as fast as the world produces data? With SAS Viya, the quickest way from a billion points of data to a point of view. It's a more productive data and AI platform that helps you get more done. Learn more today at sas.com/VIYA.